I am just nobody trying to tell everybody about somebody that can say, that has saved my soul. I believe that with all my heart. You know, I started out here at Bethel with doing the outreach, and my intentions were to do it for about 2 or 3 months and then turn it over to someone else. But it's such a joy in my heart to be able to do this. And we have a few pictures we're going to show you. And then I want to talk to you about doing work for the Lord and how a blessing it can be in your life. Sister Upton, please start. These are some hands that Sister Leanne makes for our homeless. And we pass these out. We give shoes out, hats. Next one. And look at this. Lord is blessed. He's blessed us. We give money out to them. And this is what we do. That's my granddaughter, Jada. She called me and she said, Papa, can I go with you on the outreach? I said, yes, yes. So she came with us on our last outreach. And we got to a group of men. Next one, please. These are some more things. And next one. And that's us doing our prayer before we break out. Next one. And that's us loading in the van. We have a great time out there. Next. Let's be praying with this young man. This young man right here, I'm going to tell you how much fun we have. This young man right here, I walked up to him and told him who I was and what we were doing. And I asked him, I said, is there anything I can pray with you about? He said, yes, Phil. He said, I need to get to a doctor. He said, but I don't have a way. I looked him in his eyes and I said, you do now. Here's my number and my name. Whenever you need to go to the doctor, you call me. And so he said, I need to go see a dentist. And so I got back in the van, I told Brother Mike. And Brother Mike said, he talked to you about a dentist you need to go to. And you know, we just laughed. I don't have a problem with that. I'm not the right. And so we laughed about that. Next one, sister. And that's another man there at Oak Knoll. And our research. Pray with him about him and his family and his situation. Next one. And that's my lovely wife, Brother Mike. This man right here, his name is Frank. I met him about a year and a half ago at Brinker and research. He was hit by a car and broke his ankle. And he was laying on a dirty, filthy mattress about a year and a half ago, and now he's in a wheelchair. He looked at me and said, I remember you. I remember you from last time. The guy standing with, next to Shawnee, his name is Mark. And this is what Mark told me. He looked at me and he said, Bill, Matthew 25:35. For I was hungry and you gave me meat. I was thirsty and you gave me drink. I was stranger and you took me in. He said, God bless you, brother, for what you're doing. Next one. That gentleman there, corner of Breaker and Research, right there by the 7-Eleven, standing there, and he said he was hit by a car about 3 weeks ago. While standing there, a car hit a car and knocked it into him. And he said, can you pray for my ankle? And I did, right there in all the traffic, giving God the glory and the praise. Next one. That's it. The next thing I want to share with you, there's so much more that we can do. And I've got some things, a message here I want to share with you that came to me. And I don't usually bring my phone into church, but I had to do it this morning. And this is, I was awakened two in the morning. And I went into my family room. And I sit there in my recliner, and I start to read about Colossians, and how that Paul encouraged the people that of Colossae. He encouraged them because of what he had heard about them and what they were doing. And I sit there, and then I went over and I picked up my phone, and I had a text message. I'm sitting there going, when in the world did this come in? And look at it, it says 6:20, the evening before. That's all right. Matter what they're saying. It says, Brother Bill, I have a wonderful story I need to share with you. When I first moved to this part of the state, I hated it with a passion. I didn't want to do anything. I didn't want to go anywhere. I didn't want to go to church. I made a friend, and the friend invited me to church. And finally, I went. I went with her, and they had me hook, line, and sinker. I found out about a ministry that made me think of you. And I've had such a blessing to be a part, something so beautiful. There's a prison in Bridgeport, Texas, about 15 miles from my house. When I have we have a prison ministry there. I put my name in and never thought that I'd be blessed this way. Had a blessing as it brought to me. There's a bunch of young men made mistakes in life and have been washed in the blood of the Lamb. I've never had anything so beautiful in my life as those wonderful young men. Sometimes we don't even get out until 9 p.m. talking about the Bible because they just want us to stay and talk to them. As soon as I get my clearance, I'm going to be a part of helping them in crafts. They make laundry baskets and mattresses, and then I make the quilt to put in the baskets. And last 6 months, I have been crocheting baby blankets to go into the baskets, but that they call Moses. I always wondered if God had a purpose for me, Brother Bill, or I found my calling. I've never been so happy to be in such a small town. I got a Bible study, here it is, 3 times a week, including the one with the young men. I'm just happy. I have never been so happy as I am now. Somehow, I think you still are a part of me. Hallelujah. A lot of that in me is from your sweet ministry. You planted a seed in me. God, let it grow.
Yes.
All right.
And it's flourishing now.
Flourishing.
Flourishing now. We never know what we say or do for people, how it's going to bless them. And I think about that. Those of you who don't know, that message was from Sister Jeannie Coker. And she is now going to be working in prison ministry because of the motivation that the Lord blessed me with. And I think about all that God has given us and all that we, Sister Linda, have to give back to this world. I walked into HEB on Wednesday morning, and I was talking to a young man that I witnessed to, and he came to Christ. This young man told me, he said, "Bill, I need you to pray for my dad." He said, "He had a stroke." I said, "Okay, no problem." He said, "He's in Kyle, Texas." I said, "Oh, man." I looked at him, I said, "John, I'm going to be up there way Saturday." I said, "I will pray for him. Let me know. But call me and let me know when. I will make a personal appearance. Whether it's in the hospital or in his home, I would go and pray for him." He never called me. But I think about these things, how God opened up doors for us. And all we've got to do, Sister Gail, is to walk through them. It's just to walk through them. Pray that y'all continue to pray for us. I want to thank every one of you who donate to the homeless outreach, your time, your effort, and your prayers, most of all. And I constantly pray that each one, under the sound of my voice, will step out on God, test him, try him. And that individual that you come in contact with in the store, that's how I met John in HEB. Just went up to him and said, "Hey, brother, how you doing? How you doing?" Start talking to him about the Lord. And he didn't know some things, but God brought me into his life and giving him material, scriptures. I gave him a Bible. And he said, "Pray for me, man. I want to do better. I want to be a better man." I prayed that, and he cried right there in the store. holding hands with this man, he's crying. No matter where you are, show Christ. Let Christ be seen. I want to thank my brother there, Raj, Merle. They went out with me over by campus. And we went out praying for folks on the street there. That is what God is calling us to do. Wherever there's a need, Sister Quigg, Brother Quigg, and all of the others that go out with us, we thank you. I thank you. God thank you. And when I go out, you go out. It's not a one-man show. It's God's show. God bless you.
Yeah, missions. A lot of you know me and kind of where I came from. My family, the Dolmans. Oh, that's a few years ago. I'll let you figure out which one is me. I'm the youngest, just so you know. My family came from Michigan. We were born up around the Detroit area. Back in 1963, God called my parents to go into full-time Christian service. They'd been saved since 1949, raised all six of us kids in church, loving God, looking for ways to serve. So in 63, when God called my parents into full-time Christian service, the thing to do was find a Bible school. Where are you going to go to learn what you need to do? So we moved to Texas. I got to tell you, that's a rude awakening. Michigan to Texas in the summertime. I can think of a lot of times it might have been better. December, January, anything. But we moved to Texas, spent our first Christmas in shorts and bare feet. That year, it was the strangest thing in the world. As my dad went through Bible school, he felt the calling on his life to go into full-time missionary work. Wasn't sure where, but he and Mom started praying about it. And I was just a kid. I remember when they started talking about the mission field, I was probably 7 to 8 years old. Didn't really know what that meant as far as going to a different country, but I knew changes were coming. I remember my dad talking about going to Costa Rica was where he thought we were going to go. He thought that's where God was leading him. Matter of fact, we printed our first prayer card saying the Dolmans to Costa Rica. Use this picture. Isn't that a trip? My bangs couldn't have been any straighter. I don't know how they did that. So printed those prayer cards, and my dad got to praying about it, and he pulled up a map one day of Central America showing somebody where Costa Rica is, where we were going. And he couldn't find Costa Rica. All he could see was Honduras, the central country of Central America. That's it. And he goes, I think we're going to Honduras. Gonna keep praying here, but I see Honduras in our future. Didn't know anything about Honduras. We certainly didn't speak Spanish, but that's what we did. Dad graduated from the Bible Baptist Seminary in Arlington, where we've had the privilege of going under a different name. Mindy, you too. We actually met the Wilsons while my dad was attending the Bible Baptist Seminary. John Wilson and my dad worked together. But so funny how you intertwine with people over the years. In 1967, we graduated in 66. They got approved. That year, they upped the age that you could be approved to go to a foreign mission field. It had been 35. My dad was 36 at that time. That year, they increased the age to 39. Mom and Dad went before the mission board. Now, you tell me that was just a happenstance that happened? They went before that mission committee and went through the whole process and were approved. The mission committee looked at him and he said, Elmer, you've got six kids, so plan on deputation, minimum of 2 years. Now that would probably take a family 4 years, easy. My dad said, God wants us in Honduras. We're just going. That's what I know. Within a year's time, my dad had raised every dime of support that we needed, and we were packing up and moving on. We had six kids. There were six of us. We packed up this trailer. Somebody painted it, the Dolmans to Honduras, map of Honduras on the side of it. We packed everything we owned in our lives into that trailer. Now, one of the things when I look at that picture, and as I was putting the presentation together, I kind of got this lump in my throat because I remember that day, my two oldest sisters, Annette and Suzanne. Annette had just graduated from high school and was starting the Bible Baptist Seminary that next fall. Suzanne was a senior in high school. They didn't go with us. We left them in the States because of the place they were in their life. They needed to stay. And to this day, I remember the day that we all piled in that car, hooked up that trailer, and said goodbye. If you think saying goodbye is hard, try doing it to siblings that you don't know how long it's going to be before you see them again. And we didn't have the communication like they do now. I am so grateful every time I hear our missionaries communicating with their families and being able to stay in touch and being able to do those things. We didn't have that luxury. So we move on to Central America, and the next day you look up, and actually this was Easter. Now there's four of us. Kind of seems a little strange that you just strike one, strike two, off they go. So we settled into Central America. We readjusted to a family of four instead of a family of six. First, we lived in Costa Rica to learn the language, went to language school, and then we moved to Tegucigalpa, Honduras. Tegucigalpa is in the central country of in the central part of the central country of Central America. That's how I remembered where we were. Actually, when we got to Tegucigalpa, we looked at the city, and Dad said, we need to be outside the city, and he started looking, and we moved on a mountain called El Atillo, just outside of Tegucigalpa. It was about a 45-minute drive. It probably wasn't more than 10 or 11 miles, but when the roads do this, and they're pretty much gravel going up the side of the mountain, it takes a little while to get there. So we would drive up that road and get there. While we were there in Honduras, we acquired some new friends. Two of my favorites were King and Duchess, our German shepherds. They were our watchdogs, they were our protectors, and sometimes they were my best friends because, you know, you get to make sure you're not going anywhere. One funny story about King, hadn't actually thought of this. He was a big dog, I was a little kid, had him on a chain one day, walking him around the road, having a great time. Go across this part, there's a drop off, and my dad's down below. Didn't see that I'm on the other end of the chain with King, and I had it wrapped around my hand because I didn't want him to get away. Dad called him. King went. So did I. So, you know, it's the things. I never wrapped his chain again. So as we started building the ministry there in Honduras and looking around at where did God want us to serve, he took us up to our first place where we started. Our first church was in a little pueblo called Jutiapa. It was another 40-minute drive from where our house was and where we lived. The house sits in the very center. Now they've got clothes hanging on it. It was actually a house, but at the time was empty. My dad got in touch with, you know, there were no telephones. There was no electricity. So it was go door to door, try to find out who owned that piece of property and that little mud hut. Found him, and we paid them $15 a month to rent this little building. But you know, God didn't care what the building looked like. And once we had that place established, we had horses, because the roads, they're not so good down there. So we got on horses, and most of the houses are not on the roads. We got on horseback and we started visiting door to door, riding up into their yard saying, hey, we're gonna have services. We're gonna tell, we wanna teach you about Jesus. We're gonna have church. Come and join us. This is where it's going to be. And you had to say, well, it's the house on the turn that's before the, you know, mountain that's over here. That's how you gave directions. We didn't have addresses up there. So we went up to that church and we started. And when people first start coming to church down there, it's children and women usually that come in first. Because the men, you know, not so much. They don't really want to get there. So they send the women and children to check it out and see what's going on. While we were visiting to start that church up in Jutiapa, we rode the horses. And one day I was riding with Dad, and we went up kind of over this ridge. And Dad looked down and saw this other little pueblo, kind of down in a little bit of a valley. And he said, hey, what village is that? Where is that? And they said, well, that's Billy Gwyn, don't have much. And he's like, well, why didn't we know about that one before? And they went, oh, you don't want to go there. Billy Gwyn is not a place where you want to go and take your family. And Dad said, why? He said, because they'll kill you before you get out of there. My dad said, well, I've got a pretty big God, so I don't know that I'm really necessarily afraid of that. So next thing you know, we're heading to Billy Gwyn, riding the horses, going door to door. First, he went to the school. There was a one-room schoolhouse in Billy Gwyn. It was a green building, adobe painted green, a noxious little color. But anyway, we started inviting people to come. And it was a little bit reserved. You didn't really know what you were going to get. But we had this school building reserved to have our services in. So we went to Hutiapa in the morning and did our service there. We went to Billy Gwyn in the afternoon. It was supposed to start at 2 o'clock. We got there. We had a little pump organ. It folded down into this little square case. And you'd open it up and do the braces. And literally, my mother played a pump organ. So it was like, she could get going on that pump organ and play just about anything you wanted. I've heard her play the wedding march on that organ. It was pretty funny. But she was playing choruses and just trying to liven up some music and get people to hear there were things going on. So we're waiting, and all of a sudden we look up. 27 men walked in that building for church that morning. Kind of came in. It was almost like they were marching in a row. And the men down there carry these big machetes. Anybody ever seen a machete like you can get in Honduras or Mexico, anywhere like that? Well, they're big. And when they're strapped on their side, they look even bigger. As these 27 men filed in and sat down, my dad, I remember him telling us later, I had a little uneasy feeling. I know my God's big, but this is a little bit scary here. What have I done? And he kept thinking, I'm going to preach love. I'm going to preach about Jesus' love. That's all I'm talking about this morning. And God kept saying, Omer, you're going to put some sin in there. And you're going to talk about sin. And you're going to talk about the wages of sin. And then you'll talk about love. My dad that Sunday morning preached a sermon like one I've never forgotten. He used two scriptures that I remember. He used John 3:16 and he used Romans 5:8. Romans 5:8 has become one of my favorite verses, but God commendeth his love toward us in that while we were yet sinners, Christ died for us. One of the first verses I learned in Spanish, and I remember just sitting there as he preached, and I'm thinking, well, he's doing a pretty good job. It was quiet in the house. And he finished preaching, and my mom went up to the little organ and started playing Just As I Am. My two sisters and I stood up to sing with her, Just As I Am, without one, it was in Spanish, though, Tal Como Soy. So we started singing, and Dad was giving an invitation and just saying, I'd love to talk to anybody about Jesus and what Jesus can do in your life. And this one man at the very back, he's sitting on the last row of seats in that schoolroom, got up out of his chair. He started down that center aisle, and as he came down that aisle, my dad looked at him and he remembered, that's the one man I remember seeing come in with a big gun on the side of him. And Dad thought, okay, God, you've got this. And he also said, I remember thinking, what have I gotten my family into? What's happening? Where are we going here? Man got about halfway down the aisle, and my dad was just looking him straight in the eye, and tears started rolling down the side of his face. And he came up to my dad and he said, I need this Jesus that you're talking about. He said, I've killed people. I've done so many bad things, I can't even list them. But he said, I've never heard of Jesus. Yes. And that day, Don Narciso accepted Jesus Christ as his Savior. Amen. He was talking to my dad after church, and he said, I want you to know that the plan here today was we were coming, we were meeting you here, and we were finishing you and your family off because we didn't need your kind here in our village. And Dad said, but God said you did. It's one of those memories that will never leave me. About 5 years later, his past finally caught up to him. He was riding the bus from downtown up to his village. Two men got off, shot him, and killed him. But I know that when my dad crossed over in 1997 from here, heading to heaven, I believe that Don Narciso was at that door waiting for him. And that's amazing. So after the years I've spent in Honduras, just being a missionary's kid and growing up doing those things, it has instilled a passion in me for missions. You may not be able to tell that today, but I'm a little passionate about missions. And I am particularly, I hear and feel our missionary children. So often we talk about the parents and we need to pray for, you know, Brian and Mindy Clark, and we need to pray for these, and we so often don't really focus on the children. But I want to talk about four things that we as a church family can keep in mind about our missionary children. One of the things that our missionary kids will never say to us is, I just want to be normal. You think, well, of course you're normal, you know. No, but when they come in, they know that they're expected to act a different way and be a different way. I had so much fun. We went out with the Fraleys. Tim and all, a bunch of us went out with the Fraleys when they came in. Their little Jackson, eight years old at that time. Now, Jackson's got some spunk in him. He got something on his dinner plate that wasn't to his liking, and he didn't really like it. And his parents, you could tell, had that horrified look like, oh man, we're with church people. We want to get in there and get supported. And now I've got a kid throwing a fit. And I'm like, he's a kid. Let him be a kid. Now, I'm not saying let him, you know, tear the house down. But let them be kids. They shouldn't have to be any different than your kids or my kids just because they're some missionary's kids. One of the things that they want to be normal about is, where are they from? When you have small children that go to another field, I can tell you that that new field becomes home. And when they come back to the States on furlough and they look around here and everybody's going, isn't it good to be home? I remember thinking, no, honey, I'm not home. Home's in Honduras. I left home to come back here because we had to go around to all these churches and say hi to everybody. But home is Honduras. That's okay. You know, I knew that I was an American by birth. My passport said I was an American. But my heart today is still as much a catracha as I was when I lived in Central America. And that's okay. Catracha is the, you know, we call gringos for Americans. I was a catracha. Yeah. Okay, so sorry about that. That was one of my old words. So they're reminded daily that they live here, but they're from somewhere else, and they get confused, and it's easy to mix all that up together. So when our missionary kids come home, you know, talk to them about, hey, where do you live, and how is it while you're here, and let them tell you where is home for them. Let's don't tell them where it's home. Some of their customs are going to be different. I bet the kids, when they come back, when the Oryx come back from Wales, and the Clarks come back from London and all that, what do you want to bet? They're going to have a little bit of a British accent to their English because it's what they hear all day, every day. I remember as a child coming back and I'd be talking in English, and I was so used to talking in Spanish that every once in a while I would stop and go, I know there's an English word for that, but not really finding it right now. And that's okay. They've been sent to this country to work and to love and to be there with their people. They're going to pick up their customs, and that's okay. And we need to let them know that it's okay. That if they talk a little bit differently, enjoy those differences. Go there with them. The next thing is, they often don't know where they're from. They don't know if they've grown up overseas. They don't really understand, you know, the friends. They've left all their friends, and now they're back here, and they don't know how to do that. Their little minds are just kind of moving all the way around, never knowing. Okay, so now I'm not normal, and I don't know where I'm from. I'm really pretty lost. The next question that we throw out at missionary children is, well, of course you're going to be a missionary when you grow up, right? Maybe, maybe not. I know a lot of kids that were missionaries when their parents were missionaries when we were all kids. There's a lot of them not on the field. I'm one of those. I've kept my passion for missions here in the U.S. Do I ever wish that I had ended up as a missionary going out somewhere else? Absolutely, almost every day of my life. But it isn't the plan and the path that was set for me. But some of these missionary kids just think, I don't want to be a missionary. I don't like some of the things involved with it. We don't want to expect that that's where they're going to end up and what they want to do. The fourth thing that missionary kids need to be acknowledged about is their struggle with their parents' time dedicated and put into the ministry and their work. And these kids sometimes go, you know, I'd like to be first. I'd like to be a priority. I believe that pastors struggle with this the same with children, is how many times do we see people in the ministry that kind of put their kids on a side shelf because we, the church, or we as with our missionaries, expect them to put everything else aside and not focus on their family, that their family should, you're working for God, so they should be fine. But you know, that's not always fine with kids. Kids sometimes need to know that when they say, I need you to be here for this, that you be there for that. It doesn't mean that you don't care about God and that you don't care about that work. It does mean that you were given these children to raise. God blessed you with those children. Remember that. Put those kids where they belong and where they should be. They're already on display 24/7. They have to act better than, they have to look better than, they have to dress better than, they have to do all these things because of that constant in the department store window. They're on show all the time. Let them know that they are important. When they come back here, think of all the little things that we could do for them to welcome them into our church and to let them know that we're delighted they're here and not put them on display. Do you know how many times I've walked into a church as a kid? So figure me 8, 9, 10. It's a little hard to kind of figure that because I'm 2 or 3 years older than that now. But do you know how many times I've walked into a church and I just want to sit in the Sunday school class, right, and just kind of be invisible? I really don't want. And the first thing they do is the Sunday school teacher gets up and goes, we have a missionary's kid in the class today. Come on, don't you want to come up here and tell us all about? Yeah, not so much. I'm a little better at public speaking now than I was at 8 or 10. It was not my favorite thing to do. Fortunately, I'm almost over that. I'm still quite bashful, as I know you all know. But, you know, these kids don't want to just always perform. They're not our little puppets. When I talk about our missionary kids and I think about our missionary kids, one of the verses that comes to me is Mark 15:16, is go ye into all the world and preach the gospel to every creature. And that's what they're doing. That's what they're doing alongside their parents. Some kids choose to be more involved with their parents. Some kids choose to be more active in what they're doing. I was teaching Sunday school by the time I was 12. Some of the happiest memories of my life, teaching little kids how to sing some of the choruses and songs and showing flannel graph lessons to these children and talking about Jesus and teaching them the stories about Noah and Jonah and Moses. And I could go on and on and on with the list, teaching them about creation, where they came from, that God made us. It was one of my passions and one of my biggest delights was being able to teach children. I also had the privilege of teaching adults. My parents started a Bible school while we were down there because preachers, they were trying to ready preachers to get ready to take care of the works. It's really funny. It's hard to be a preacher if you can't read. Most of the people up in the mountains where we lived were illiterate. They didn't have the opportunity to go to school. They needed to work, especially the men needed to be working and raising the crops and doing whatever with their families. Two men in particular that stand out to me, Pedro and Benigno, they were brothers. Pedro is still pastoring one of the churches in Honduras to this day. Every Sunday is in the pulpit. But I sat with those two men, and it's a whole lot easier to teach you to read in Spanish than English. So I'm glad I was teaching them Spanish, because an A is an A, an E is an E, an I is an I. In English, not so much. Taught those two men to read, and I remember the first Sunday, they stood up in church and read John 3:16. There aren't even words for how that makes you feel as a kid, to know that you've been able to help them move through their life, being able to share Jesus with everybody they come in contact with. So I want to move out of my childhood as a missionary, and I want to introduce you to all of our missionary children. So we've got a bunch of them. The Clarks, let's move on to the Clark family. There we go. So the Clarks have four children. They've got, as you can see in the picture, they are our missionaries to London. So I'm looking and hoping for some really cool British accents when they come back. Madison is their oldest daughter. She's 17 years old. So she's the oldest one. She's getting to that age where they're coming to the possible in the next, you know, few years that she may leave them for the field or not go back to the field with them and stay in the States for schooling. I don't know what their long-term plan is, but be in prayer for them, because that's a hard age. It's hard to put your kids on a plane and send them away, or to get in a plane and leave them. So be in prayer for Madison as she continues to grow up. Then they have Hudson. Hudson's 14 years old. He looks to me like he is just full of life and having a good time. They go into school, the kids wear uniforms over there to school, and they're all having a great time. He's the oldest son, but the second one in line. And then they have Caitlin. Caitlin is 12 years old, and her little brother is Stefan, and he is 9. And Stefan's the one that every picture you watch, as you see him, he has a perpetual smile on his face. Cutest little thing ever. So if you keep going, you're going to see Hudson and Caitlin. They're just kind of chilling, having a good time, you know, wearing the hats, because that's what it's all about. And then Madison starting to drive. Now, I'm picturing starting to drive here in the States, right? And we're on the, what do we sit on, the left side? Yes, right, yeah. And they sit on the right, and I'm thinking, there's something wrong with that. So you figure she's going to learn to drive there and then come here? Could be a little odd for a new driver. Anyway, and Stefan, once again, there's Stefan on the swing, having a good time. Actually, he looks like he's sleeping on that swing ride. Maybe he came down from going too high. Here in Texas, it seems this year like our summer will never end. You know what I mean? But there's Hudson and Stefan and Caitlin enjoying their autumn weather, which I am incredibly jealous of this year. And I'm hoping we may get a day of autumn sometime soon. Or there's your kids out there, and they're just piling up on top of each other, having fun, rolling around in the green meadows, and enjoying the beautiful countryside where they are. And of course, you got to move from the green meadows right into the snow. Madison and Stefan jumping on that sled, man, they are heading down the hill to wherever it is they're going. I would like to see some snow. Then Hudson and Stefan get in on the fun. They've got sleds. They're just all over the place. Those guys are having the best time. And Caitlin isn't far behind, although I did note that Caitlin chose a friend to ride on the sled with. Maybe tells us something about the brothers and sisters. Not sure. So that is the Clark family, their children. Anybody remember the names? Oh gosh, y'all, I'm so proud. That's awesome. Okay, so that's the Clarks. And where are the Clarks? Cool. All right, so let's move on to the Lyles family. Anybody know where the Lyles are? Wow, y'all are amazing. Oh, wait, it says it up there. Shoot, you guys cheated. That is so not fair. Okay, so there are three kids. They have Kent, Ethan, and Natalie. Growing up, you can see that. I like the next one with Kent and Ethan. you know, a nap. I mean, you just sit down on the couch and what do? You fall asleep and take a nap. So they're taking advantage of that. Natalie, however, she's just hanging out outside. 16 years old, enjoying the outside. Looks to me like a wonderful place to go and have some fun. And then if you look at the next one, where Natalie and Kent and Ethan having a little phone time. Now, most of us carry our phones in our pockets. I don't know if they don't have cell phones, maybe, or what, but they were having a good time in the phone booths, and poor Kent in the middle didn't have a phone booth, but his fingers worked, and I hope he had good service. So who knows? The next slide with this one is really the hardest thing that a missionary family will ever do. And they are leaving the two boys in the States when they head back to their mission field. And you can see just by the body language in those pictures. I can envision them driving away in their car with tears kind of rolling down their face. My mother's favorite thing was to wear sunglasses when we went to the airport to drop off if somebody had come down to visit, especially my sisters. From the time we left the house, my mom had her sunglasses on because you couldn't see the tears as much that way. But, you know, we think here in the States it's hard to, our kids graduate from high school or if they go away to college or something like that, and we think that's hard. How about having some serious ocean time between you and where your kids are? That's tough. They need our prayers. Now let's move on to the Orrick family. We should all remember them. I'm not going to ask where they're from because I put it on the slide. Next time I won't do that because y'all cheat. So they are our missionaries to Wales. They've got two sweet little kids. Isabella is 11 years old and big brother Britton just turned 13 in August. So they are moving on up the time slides there and getting older. One of the things that Richie told me when I was asking for pictures and everything from him is, yeah, he's 13. That was kind of where we left it. I felt like that was enough. I've had two teenagers in my house, I remember. Okay, so phone booths, for whatever reason, seem to be a very popular place to take pictures for everybody. Although I love the Wales phone booths. I mean, are they not the cutest ever? Anyway, I want to go to Wales just so I can make a call out of one of those. Okay, so when Richie was here at Bethel presenting his ministry, he talked to us, I don't know if you guys remember, but he talked about the weather over there. And that they have a lot of time that's cloudy and kind of dismal, and it's cool, and you know, you're raining and all of that. You know, imagine how hard it would be to live in that on a full-time basis, to where you're thankful if you ever get a sunny day because you spend so many in that overcast, heavy day. When you see an overcast, heavy day, let that take you back to the Orricks and make you think of praying for them. Just asking God to throw a little sunshine in their life. Give them a little bit of a break from that dismal weather. Then we're going to move on to the Kirshner family. I got to tell you, of all of our missionary families, this is a family that I am so excited for them to hurry up and have their furlough so we can come home. They can come home and we can meet them. But they've just been very special in my heart. They've got, I was going to say, where are they? But they're in Taiwan, because again, I'm not going to let y'all cheat. They went to the field with only one little girl. They had little Adeline when they went to the field, and since then have added their sweet little baby boy to that mix. So here you're going to meet Adeline. She is now 4, growing like crazy. And one of her friends is that enormous beetle. Which, I'm sorry, wouldn't be mine, but if she enjoys it, as long as she doesn't eat it, I say go for it. Then you've got Aiden. Aiden was born in September last year, so 2018, but in this picture, he's 8 months old. His mom says he loves watching video, and his favorite video, she called it praises, so I'm thinking that that's some kind of praise music or something, not sure what the picture is, but he sure seems to be having a good time with it. And then if you look at Adeline eating her mango ice cream. Now, that is a serious dish of ice cream. Preacher, I was thinking, you may want to go over there and check out some of the ice cream. So you know, maybe at least show her chocolate chip or something. And then Aiden, his mom and dad said he loves any food. He'll eat anything, anytime, anywhere, just lay it out there and it's gone. So eating is definitely his favorite thing to do. And then we've got Adeline on her first day to go to school. How exciting is that for a four-year-old that, you know, you're just all ready and you're all dressed and woohoo, ready to go to school. So she's going to do that. And while Adeline's heading off to school, little Aiden is now growing. He's up to 11 months old in this picture, pulling up and trying to walk and crawling and playing with his trucks and doing all the things that he gets to do. Now Aiden is officially a year, so now he's 13 months, but I didn't get a picture of him right fresh out of the package to have with that, so he's just growing like crazy. The next family we have is the Fraley family. Hopefully everybody remembers them. They were here not that long ago. They are going to New York City. So they're one of our here at home type missionaries that we talk about. This family has five children. So Emily is 24, Kendall is 19, Willow's 14, Jackson is eight, and Luna is five. So only the three of their youngest children will be going with them to their field. So Emily, their oldest daughter, 24 years old, she just got married in May. She married a gentleman by the name of Matt, and they seem to be quite happy with that match. I think they like Matt pretty well. So they had a beautiful wedding in May, and then if that wasn't busy enough to have one daughter getting married, they moved on to June, and Kendall got married. Kendall married David in June. So two weddings, back-to-back months. I'm not, you know, thinking that's a great idea. I can only imagine how hard that was to do. Then Willow is 14 years old. She was one of the ones that was here with us. She's 14, but to me, it seems like she's probably 19 or 20. She was extremely poised, very well-mannered, very well-presented. I was shocked when I found out she was only 14. Sweet, sweet girl. Then, let's see, this past summer, Tony had the pleasure of baptizing Jackson, which I can only imagine as a dad how amazing that had to be able to baptize your own son, knowing that he's following the Lord, that they are going to they're not just teaching it within their family, they're going to share it with others, and they have their children that they can share it with. And then little Luna. Luna's 5 years old. She looks like she loves everything. She was busy. She was just, and she knows that she's the baby of that family. You can just tell that in everything about her, but she loves her ice cream for sure. And then our last slide today is going to be Jackson and Luna heading off to school this year, ready to go. Show you can see the excitement in their face with life and all the changes that are about to happen with all of them, with their moves and with the new ministry, and just keep them all in your prayers as they go. So in wrapping this up, I came across a poem that I wanted to leave you guys with. Kind of made me stop and think. You know, we talk about ways that we can all be missionaries because we are all responsible to be missionaries, whether it's here at home or wherever we are. But I loved this poem. It says, "I saw so many people there in bondage to their sins, and Jesus told me I should go, that there were souls to win. But I said, Jesus, I can't go to lands across the seas. He answered quickly, yes, you can, by traveling on your knees. He said, you pray, I'll meet the need. You call, and I will hear. It's up to you to be concerned for lost souls far and near. And so I did. I knelt in prayer, gave up some hours of ease, and with the Savior by my side, I traveled on my knees. As I prayed on, I saw souls saved and twisted person healed. I saw God's workers' strength renewed while laboring on the field. I said, yes, Lord, I'll take the job. Your heart I want to please. I'll heed your call and swiftly go by traveling on my knees.